Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots nonprofit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on KX93.5.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRN LP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5. This disclaimer is a statement notifying the listening audience that any opinion expressed on the air is not reflective of KX93.5, its management, or its board of directors.
And good morning, and welcome to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage, and a clinical psychologist. And this is a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. live on KX 93.5, or you can listen on a podcast at your convenience. So this morning, I'm really excited. I've got some awesome guests joining me. We are going to talk about the movie Eighth Grade, and really just talk about it through the lens of adolescence and finding your place in the world. The movie has been receiving a lot of critical acclaim, and I think it has about, 98% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's just a great film by Bo Burnham. So we're going to take a break in just a minute, but before we do that, just want to remind all of our guests that you're listening to a show that is meant to be therapeutic in the informational sense only, and that please take what you need from it, but also remember to seek mental health guidance if you need it. So on that note, we'll take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk about adolescence and finding your place in the world in 2018.
Caught on one-way streets, a taste of bittersweet. Love will survive somehow, somewhere. One love feeds the fire, one heart bears desire, one love is crying out.
Too hard.
And welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage. I'm a clinical psychologist, and you're listening to a show about our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Sunday morning at 8 a.m. So today we're going to talk about adolescence and finding your place in the world, especially what that looks like now in 2018 with the internet and all those crazy things that our kids have that I certainly did not have. And I've got some very special guests today. I'm welcoming my teen friends, Keegan and Christian. Welcome.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Thank you. You guys are going to speak a little closer to the mics. All right. I know this is a new thing, so I appreciate it. Talk about nerve-wracking as we're talking about feeling socially awkward. So thanks for joining me. All right, so I'm just going to introduce the movie to our listeners. If you haven't heard about it, it's a film by Bo Burnham. And I guess he was a YouTube star back in, the mid-early 2000s. But he's written and directed this film starring Elsie Fisher. And really, the way they describe it is that she's a 13-year-old girl who is enduring the tidal wave of contemporary suburban adolescence as she makes her way through the last week of middle school. And then basically begins the disastrous few episodes that happen before she finishes the year. The film is really, it's sort of gut-wrenching in many ways. There's a lot of topics that are worth exploring. The idea of peer pressure and anxiety and social media saturation. And really the idea of being awkward and cringing. I said the first time I saw this film, I was just cringing through the whole first part of it. And I do want to say the film is rated R, but there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that it really shouldn't have been. And even Common Sense Media, which really goes through for parents and rates films, says that, you know, it's really a good film. And they even call it slightly cringeworthy, but really a good film to watch with your teen. So there are a few places, right, that are a little bit, okay, maybe you're at the end of 7th, 8th grade, maybe. But frankly, I think a lot of parents don't really realize how much you guys do talk about these kind of topics much more than we want to to acknowledge. So it's kind of a universal story. I found myself thinking this is a story with a girl as the lead, but it is not a female story. I mean, there are some things that are female specific. So the film really opens with Kayla. She's sort of doing some YouTube tutorials on how to be yourself. While we all know behind the scenes that most of us are struggling to figure out what that means. Can you guys relate to this idea of people posting YouTube videos and probably no one watching, but trying to create content that way?
Yes, very much so. Everyone talks about those sort of things, and everyone wants to sort of make like content and hope it'll be viewed by their classmates, and usually no one watches it.
Right. What do you mean by that?
Just like they make it to, you know, put themselves out there, but they also are like very scared of, you know, what their classmates will think, like how they'll judge them. So.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's always been an issue, you know, for middle schoolers, no matter when you started. But for you guys, I think the idea of it being out there, everything about your lives is broadcast, if you choose, right on social media. So how do you think social media affects your sense of self-awareness in the world now?
You just always have someone that's going to judge you no matter what.
Mm.
There's always going to be someone out there that is going to judge you one way and another person that's going to judge you another. So you always have eyes on you no matter what. So.
Wow. Yeah.
You're always on display.
Yeah, that's a good point, both of you. So what does that feel like? I mean, that's a kind of a classic therapy question, but what is that like to feel like not only your current, you know, environment, but really everyone at all times?
Well, it's nerve-wracking. You know, you're always thinking of what other people will think of you, and it's terrible in some ways and also great in others, but it's just always the self-conscious aspect.
Yeah, I can see that. So in terms of fitting in, right, I mean, I think the idea of social cliques and, you know, how you identify in the world really starts to emerge in middle school, right, whether you're in this group or that, kids start separating. So does social media have a role in what group you get placed in? Is that something or no?
I don't think so. I think it's more social what group you get, like, placed in. I think it's just kind of your interests. And I don't really think social media has a placed in, more of just like how you get judged in a way. I don't really think that it affects what group you get put in.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. And so do you think that do you think the girls post more on social media than boys?
Definitely.
Because yeah, they're always, you know, a lot of them just want to seek attention from, like, their peers and everything. And it's, like, understandable in that way. But, you know, they're also putting themselves out there where they can't get judged and, you know,
right,
made fun of by other people, which isn't necessarily good. But
so you think boys are just less inclined in general? I mean, this is, of course, not true for all boys. But in many cases, true. Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely. Okay. So what kind of content, I mean, this is one of the things that we had about the show, is the film is from a girl's perspective. And what I was excited about was having you guys on and sort of talking about it from a boy perspective, although your opinions obviously don't represent all boys either. But I think knowing both of you, you have a pretty good read on, you know, sort of the general thing. So what do boys post about? You know, do boys make the same kind of videos as Kayla's making about, you know, how to fit in, how to go with the flow? I mean,
Generally, no. That's why the story was written about a girl, is because sometimes we're a bit more superficial and like about these sort of things, and it's more of like trying, rather than like trying to like put yourself out there and getting people to know you. It's more of like, oh, look at this thing I found. Look at this. It's all.
So you're sharing content.
Yeah,
is that what boys you're saying boys do? Okay. Yeah. So like sharing videos. Is that what you're saying, or like? Okay.
Stuff, whereas like girls will like share more like, you know, like pictures of like themselves and stuff, or they'll do videos like that. And I don't think that boys would ever do that because they don't really want to like share their emotions as much. But
Yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. Well, I mean, we did talk about this a little bit, the idea of boys sharing emotions versus girls. And so what are your experiences around that?
Well, generally, boys are a bit more closed off and, like, won't talk about it as much, even though we still have them. And girls most, like, talk about their feelings a bit more than boys do.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, boys are kind of almost trained, in a sense, to not show their emotions, and it ends up getting, like, some kids, like, very depressed just because they don't really have that outlet, and so it's... Yeah, I just think everybody kind of needs an outlet or just someone to lean on, in a sense.
That makes sense. So, I mean, how do you think that affects your relationships if you're not really taught to, or as frequently taught to, express yourselves? I think people think boys don't have as many emotions, but I always say this, I know that you do because I'm around you. Even if I can read you and you're not telling me what's going on, how do you think that sort of tendency to not show emotion shows up in your friendships, with your parents?
It just negatively affects those parts of your life, since you're not, like, able to share your, like, what you really feel on the inside, and it tends to bottle up and then come out when it really shouldn't.
Yeah, like blowing, like I've taken too much now, and yeah, and those types of things. Yeah, I think that's probably likely. You know, a couple things came up for me, too, as I was watching the film. First of all, you know, her face is there's a lot of acne on her face. And there's a lot of debate about this. But, I mean, to be honest, that's what a lot of people's faces look like. So what was your experience of watching her as opposed to some, like, beautifully brushed teenager? Did you relate to that at all? Did it make her more real? What did it feel like?
It's just so true. Yeah. It's just, like, spot on. Everybody deals with that stuff, so.
Right.
Yeah, I was glad to see that it was, like, finally, like, representation of that part of life, but, like, in a good way. And it was honest and true and scarily relatable.
Yeah, yeah, that was the big comment, right? It's like, oh, my gosh, that was super real. And I had read that she actually, the actress, Elsie, really wanted that. She really wanted to keep that part in the film with her own, with, you know, because that's what she was going through. She had just finished eighth grade when they shot the film. You know, it's funny, as I was sitting there, you know, me being a child of the 80s, which is just, oh my gosh, so crazy, so much time has gone by. So there's this part in the film, it's early on, and they're giving out awards, superlatives they call them, right? It's like most talkative, most quiet, most, you know, funny or funniest. And you know what? It triggered in me that, oh God, I remember hating that. Like that feeling of, would I be nominated for that? And I'm sure I won't. And what's that like? And I kind of was horrified that we still do this. I really feel like this is not helpful, but this is just my perspective. What do you guys think about that whole idea of like giving awards away for things like that?
Well, I do think that some people do need to be, you know, recognized for their good work, or else there's no like real incentive for some people. Some people just do it for like, you know, that aspect.
Right.
But I do think that it also puts down others, especially for like those categories where it's like, you know, how you act or like your like features, like best eyes or whatever. It just puts down other people like, okay, well, like he has the best eyes, like I don't, like, and you just feel bad about yourself.
And it's also terribly nerve-wracking when you don't know if you're going to get nominated for anything. You don't know if you're going to be, like, up there. You have no idea, and you're just waiting. And it's terrible that they don't tell you, like, beforehand.
Oh, they don't tell you beforehand?
No.
Mm-mm.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they do that at our school.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say, I mean, as a mom, as a previous, you know, adolescent quite a long time ago, and certainly as a psychologist, I sat there going, yeah, I don't know why we're still doing this. I think if you worked hard at something, I hear what you're saying, like, you know, you've really, whether it's grades or academics or sports or whatever, art, music, but at some point, like, to be awarded because you talk a lot or because you have eyes, like, you have no control over what eyes you have, right? I mean, you're just, that's lucky. If you hit the jackpot, like, great for you. But what if you don't, you know? So I felt that was pretty, I don't know, worth revisiting, I would say. So, okay. So I think on that note, we will take a quick break. I do want to come back and talk about a big piece of the film, which is anxiety. And, you know, social anxiety is at an all-time high in our culture. I work with a lot of teens and adults too, and I see a lot of anxiety and that sort of awkwardness that we feel. And so we'll take a quick break, and we're going to come back and talk more with Keegan and Christian about the film Eighth Grade and some perspectives about being an adolescent in 2018. We'll be right back.
What a coward, yeah. Agnes, are you what you wanna be? Well, are you what you wanna be?
Welcome back to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage, clinical psychologist, and you're listening to a show that explores our moods, our minds, and our real lives every Sunday morning, live at 8 a.m., or you can listen via podcast at your convenience. All right, so we're talking about the movie Eighth Grade. You guys recommend it, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With my guests, who are Keegan and Christian, who are actually going to be starting high school just in a few short weeks. So I felt like they were great, great options for guests since you guys just completed eighth grade not too long ago. All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about anxiety, which I think is a huge part of this film, which is that cringy nature of like, oh my gosh. And I want to read just a tiny bit of a quote from a Rolling Stone interview with the director, with the writer-director, Bo Burnham. He says, so he's talking about anxiety and having it really bad in high school. And he says, and like Kayla, the character, this is what the writer's saying, who has trouble verbalizing what it feels like to feel so anxious, the writer-director, Bo Burnham, fishes around a bit for the words. My experience, the way I describe it, is that my nervous system is like a bull and I'm riding it. And I just have to hold on to it and not get thrown off and break my neck, he says. Being in the world with anxiety is like riding that bull and looking around, and everyone's an equestrian, like a professional rider. Kayla doesn't even say the word anxiety. She's the lead character. She thinks, I'm the only one that's feeling that way. Can you guys relate to that? Like, I'm the only one feeling that way?
You always feel very isolated, but everybody deals with anxiety, and everybody deals with it differently. But for some reason, you always feel, you know, different in a sense and just alone.
Yeah, it feels like it's just only like you, and like the feeling of loneliness is definitely one of the worst ones in the world, and like anxiety can bring upon that feeling. You're like, oh well, like this is so terrible, how could anyone else like even do this, like, so it must be just me.
Right I think that that's part of it, and people don't really always understand that anxiety is worry. You know, the idea of worrying about your grades, about the way you look, about a test or a project. Were you going to say something, Christian?
No, but yes, it's definitely worry. A lot.
A lot of worries, yeah. And I still don't think we talk about it enough. And I don't think that, you know, my poor children having a therapist mother, I'm sorry. but the idea of talking about anxiety and how much we feel that way, the truth is that most of the parents I work with feel the same way. You know, it's often correlates. You have a parent with anxiety and a kid with anxiety. But I think back to your point, Keegan, too, and yours, Christian, is that we're all feeling worry. It's just a matter of degree, probably. Certainly middle school and high school are probably on the higher end of the spectrum in terms of feeling that way. What do you think are the most anxiety-provoking experiences of adolescence, not only just eighth grade, but in general or thus far for the two of you?
I would have to say public speaking the most.
Okay.
Which is ironically what we're doing right now.
You're doing great. Keep going.
But yeah, speaking in front of others is it's just absolutely horrible because you're worrying 24/7 about like every single word. And I mean, it's not like right now, it's just fine, but
no one's watching.
But it's definitely terrible in that sense of you're like worrying, is everyone judging me? You're like, did I say something wrong? And yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit different for me. I'm fine with public speaking, but I have different things that I worry about, like like my public image, which I, you know, worry about a little bit, get a little bit self-conscious, and it's just different. Everybody thinks about like different things, you know. A lot of people, you know, it's their self-image or their grades, and everybody just has something different to worry about. So it's really, I think that's another point, like, you just feel alone because you think that everybody else is, like, dealing with something different, and, you know, you then isolate yourself because you're like, yeah, I'm the only one feeling this, like, you know, certain anxiety in the world. So it's...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. What do you remember when you first like started becoming self-conscious? I mean, do you have a memory? You don't have to share it specifically, but like, you know, what kinds of things when you really, was it the beginning of middle school? Was it earlier where you really start to notice or pay attention to like, oh my gosh, like how I just said that sounded weird or those kind of things?
Yeah, I would say generally middle school. It's not like it just happens overnight, but it definitely, you can definitely start to tell when you're thinking like, oh, are my clothes okay? Is everyone like watching what I'm doing? Am I like, do I look weird? What's going on?
Right. Yeah.
What about you? Yeah. It's just like, it's not overnight. As you said, it's just, you know, you ease into it as soon as you get into middle school, but it just gets worse and worse as you go on. But
yeah. How do you think the school environment does dealing with things like anxiety and depression, things like that, in terms of, I know that they try, but I do think that, I can see by your face. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, they do definitely try, but they're just not too great at actually explaining it and how to deal with it and how, like how it even happens. There's, like, a lot of questions, and the school tries, but it just doesn't get there all the way, I feel.
I feel like they oversimplify it in a sense where they, like, dumb it down so much that it's just, like, not even helpful at all. It's just kind of...
Definitely.
Yeah, I've heard that time and time again from this is Laguna Beach specific, and I know everyone has the same good intentions, but I've heard it from a lot of teens that there'll be like a counselor come or a talk, and it just feels so surfacey. It just doesn't even begin to crack what's really going on with you guys, and so it becomes kind of a joke, or, you know, there's just these little nuggets you maybe take, but it's not really helpful. So here's your moment, right? What do you think that our community could do, especially in the school environment, like what could happen in those conversations that would be more meaningful?
I would say just like go deeper than that, like explain it more in depth and just be like, don't say like, oh, you're feeling like anxious because blah, blah, blah. Or, well, not like, I mean, just do more to like tell us about it rather than just being like, oh, you feel anxious because blah, 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 and blah, 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 and that's it. That's the only reason. And that's, you can solve it by doing this, and it's not that easy.
Okay. So often too, like the remedies seem a little bit like band-aid-y, or like it's just do this and take some deep breaths and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, they think that everybody is just like the same anxiety, and it's just like, there's one like way to solve it, and it's not, it's a whole, but I also think that they could do it with like, you know, more like, not necessarily one-on-one, because that'd just be, you know, too hard to do with all the kids at school, but it just needs to be smaller groups, I think, because if you, you know, there's always going to be like that goofball or whatever that just ruins it for everybody else and turns the entire thing into a joke. And so it's just, it's more like meaningful. I remember like they do it in like smaller groups in elementary, and you don't even deal like within, you know, you still do, but you don't deal with it as much as you do in middle school. And it was really helpful when they did it in smaller groups, just because it was, I don't know, I just felt like it was different. There was just, it just impacted me a little bit more. And, but yeah, they just feel like it's, there's one solution, and it's, everybody deals with it differently, as I said earlier, but it's, so there's not necessarily one solution for everyone.
So are you saying that when they have like an assembly, so there's just like everybody's in one big room and the conversations kind of go down that way at this point?
Yes. Yeah, there's always someone who just shouts something and takes the whole entire meaning away from the conversation.
Yeah.
Even so, like the main like conversation isn't too in-depth anyway, so it's not easy. It's very easy to just kind of rip it apart.
Right. It becomes kind of a joke. Yeah. I like that idea. I think having small groups, I think going into more detail, I do think that the schools are limited because they have to be so respectful of everyone's experience and all of that. You know, some parents are really open with their kids and talk a lot about things, and some parents really have strong opinions about what's appropriate to talk about. Even if it's still happening, they're not talking about it or whatever. And so there probably are limited a bit, but I agree. I've heard that time and time again, that it just becomes kind of a joke, or that it's not deep enough, which is unfortunate. What do you think parents can do about helping, you know, with anxiety? Do you have any, do you think talking to parents helps? Do you think talking to friends helps? What have you guys found to be helpful when you're in those places where you feel overwhelmed?
Well, the reason that we're here is just to talk about, like, the eighth grade, because we've experienced it differently than our parents did. And so I think that you need to find someone that you can really relate to, because, you know, you just need to have, like, a friend to talk to about this stuff, because, you know, you're not going to have the same experiences as your parents. And especially with, you know, social media and everything, it's mm-hmm. just a lot different. And so you need to have someone there that's, like, at least understands a little bit more than your parents do, so.
Yeah, definitely having someone who can understand, like, what's going on and you can tell them things is very important in my book, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful, because I, even as a parent myself, there's so much I just don't understand, you know, about why certain things are such a big deal, or why, you know, fundamentally certain things I get, but it's been changing so much, even just in, you know, your lifetime between the internet, how much has changed. What role do you think that the pressure, I know we talk about it all the time, but since you guys are the ones living it, the pressure for college, the pressure for sports, all those things, I think really parental anxiety in and of itself that we can put on you guys. How do you think that impacts your anxiety? And what do you think, what could be different or changed?
I don't really know. I mean, there's always going to be pressures. And they're specifically high in, like, around, like, middle school and high school. But I don't know what I don't know what you would do to relieve them. I mean, maybe just put a bit less pressure on, like, succeeding in every category and, like, making, like, even, I don't know.
Do you think parents have too high expectations? A lot of parents?
I don't know. It's hard to say, because every parent's different. And, you know, you always want your kid to succeed in mm-hmm. everything. But mm-hmm. That's hard. That's a hard one.
Yeah, definitely. I would say that, like, I don't know. Some parental views are, like, drastically different. Like, sometimes, some parents expect their children to be, like, straight-A students, like, football, all that jazz.
Right.
Like, everything. And some are just more laid back. So it's hard to say if they're, like, in general, no.
Yeah, and I think some kids, you know, benefit from motivation and all that, and some kids it's too much for, so it's hard.
I just feel like you need to not, like, necessarily expect them to be a certain way, because mm-hmm. they're not always going to be, like, you know, they might be a straight-A student, but they might not, like, play football, and maybe you want them to be a great, you know, football player, but that's just not the way that they want to go and everything. And you just, you know, when you're growing up, you're finding yourself, so you need to just, you know, let them do what they want to do, but at the same time you need to, you know, make sure that they're doing, like, well and everything. You don't want to just completely, like, let go and just be like, oh, I don't even care anymore right. about, like, your grades or anything, but you, I don't know. It's
just, yeah.
Yeah, definitely just, like, not controlling your child's life is
What?
who would know?
Do you know what generation of parents you're talking to now? We can't control everything? Are you kidding me? No, I get it. I think it's pressure for us too as parents. You know, your kids are a reflection of yourself, and so it's hard to separate, like, my child is not me, my child's experience is not mine, and I think sometimes subconsciously we don't always realize that. In terms of learning about how to deal with anxiety, so that's one of the things I do in my practice, but, you know, it can sound kind of band-aid-y, but things like deep breathing, guided imagery, you know, therapy, what do you guys know about those things?
Well, deep breathing has always been a subject that the school is bringing up. They're like, just breathe deeply and everything will be all right.
That's all you need.
Yeah. Other tactics, not so much, but just breathing deeply has been, like, the most surface level way of dealing with these things that almost everyone brings up.
It's like the ground zero for that kind of stuff. It's just, they're like, oh, before a test, breathe deeply. Like, before this, breathe deeply. It's like,
right. It's like, thanks, I wasn't going to breathe anyway.
Oh, yeah.
You told me before.
So, I mean, what you're saying is that, like, that's a place to start, but maybe we're lacking a bit in filling in the blanks and some other things you can do?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. I agree. I think that, you know, nowadays there are so many incredible apps, and even with my adult patients, I'll be like, hey, have you checked out Insight Timer or like Budify, what I think it is, or Calm or Headspace? And they sound kind of, you know, it sounds kind of cheesy, but honestly, they can be really helpful when you're like helping your body learn to relax and things like that. But I think the root causes of anxiety are so much more than the surface of just a test. It often goes back to our families and, you know, our siblings and expectations. There's not just a one-stop shop for fixing anxiety and for the roots of where it comes from.
Definitely, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to move on from that. But I will say on my website, I have a lot of books and websites on the resources page for people who want to look for apps and things like that on drkimsage.com. If you're looking for that information. Okay, so what I really want to talk about, which I feel it really was, one of the most profound parts of the film, and I think the most emotional part of the film, which is sort of towards the end. So, you know, there's this part where, I won't go into great detail, but it's the idea of, like, you go into maybe middle school thinking you're going to be a certain way. And so there's the kind of the way the film addresses this through this like idea of this like time capsule and then coming to face with the reality of who you really were after that. And so there's sort of this idea of who you thought you'd be versus who you are. What came up for you guys in that area?
I would say like a lot. It just everyone goes into middle school with these expectations of being like, oh, everything's going to be like perfect. I'm going to be so happy. Nothing's going to go wrong. We're all going to be like Glee or like, but it's not that way. And coming to terms with that is definitely one of the hardest parts of middle school. And it's just knowing that it's not going to be like a movie and it's not going to be, well, actually it was kind of in the situation, but
yeah,
it's not going to be like a perfect, like musical.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And life's not perfect. And it's, you know, when you're younger, you think that that it will be. And then everything changes and I don't know, but I always think like when you're little, people ask you like, oh, what do you want to grow up to be and everything? And then I'm just like thinking back and it's changed like 100 times. Mm-hmm. And so it's just so different because you're just trying to find yourself and you changed so much during middle school, especially she changed like a lot. And that's, you know, it's just, you're trying to find yourself. And when you're young, you think that it's, everything's going to be fine, and then things happen. And
yeah,
so.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about actually as a result of this film was the idea of what do you do, how you feel when on the outside everything looks great, right? Your kid seems like they've got it all figured out, but oftentimes they don't. Can you guys share with me? We had a little conversation about this earlier.
Yeah, I would have to say that's definitely not the case, like, that they're good on the inside all the time. Like, you can be a straight-A student and still not be, like, doing fine. It's like, somewhat of just, like, an illusion on the outside. You always have to, like, make sure, because it's hard to tell sometimes. Kids will hide it away from you, because that's, like, they don't want you to be, like, disappointed in them, and they just don't want to, like, have to deal with it sometimes. So, having that, like, shield of being like, oh, well, he's doing this or he's doing that is definitely not like the way to justify like your child's like mental state.
Right. That's a good point, because I think parents often try to check the boxes and think, well, everything's, you know, people will actually, we've had a lot of suicides, you guys know that. And so people will say, gosh, you know, like everything seemed great. They were doing this, they were doing that. I had no idea. I think, you know, it is harder to tell sometimes, but I think it's very important that we are checking in. But it's hard because, you know, you go through a stage where you're pulling away from your parents. You're so kind of supposed to do that. And I think parents don't often know, well, when do I lean in? When do I pull away? It's, to me, the hardest part of parenting.
Yeah, for sure. It's just a weird time. But it's, you know, I always find that talking to my parents does help in some senses. And I don't know, I always find that talking to people my age that, like, I can trust is just so much more helpful. It's just because they understand so much more. Mm-hmm. But you really just have to find someone, because a lot of people don't talk to, you know, people their age because they think that they're going to, like, you know, if they open up to them, then they'll have something to, like, use against them in the future.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why a lot of kids don't open up to, like, their peers. So you just have to find that, like, person that you can, like, really trust 100%. And mm-hmm. that's what a lot of kids have trouble doing.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's a different, I mean, this might sound a little stereotypical, but do you think it's different for boys in terms of girls? Because I know they're with girl culture and sort of there's a different way of bullying with girl culture and exposing secrets. How do you think that differs? And of course, this is generalizing, but for boys versus girls?
I would have to say that for boys, it's like a bit more important to have like someone. I mean, it's obviously important, like equally have someone to talk to, but like boys are generally a bit less like vocal about these things. And so I think it's really like important for them to have some sort of outlet, since I think girls may talk to each other a bit more about these things.
Mm.
Yeah, and it's good for them to do that. And it's, you know, boys should start doing that a little bit more. And, you know, I think it's also just because they can't find that person. And it's, I don't know, I couldn't find that person for a little while and then ended up finding them. And it was, like, so much more helpful, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do think we've talked a lot about the language of emotional expression for men versus women, let alone for boys versus girls. And I just still think we're socializing boys. While it's changed, there's still a lot of differences in how we do that and how we teach you guys to have that emotional language, or we don't teach you how to have that language. What about the idea, we discussed this too, when you're getting an award for something, or like your parents are saying, like, oh, I'm so proud of you, you did great. And inside, what you guys said to me last night was like, yeah, sometimes I don't feel great. And you're saying that. And it feels what?
It feels absolutely terrible. Not like if there's something that you did and you don't feel proud of yourself for doing it, it's worse for other people to be like, oh, you did such a great job, because you're disappointed in yourself. You're like, oh, well, I'm not even living up to the standard of being like doing a great job. And this feels false and everything feels terrible. So it's like if you don't think that what you're doing is like the best you can do, it just feels absolutely terrible in some ways.
Even if other people think that it's the best that you can do and you know that it isn't, it just feels fake and not worth it. Or so
how can I find out about that as a parent? Like, what can I look for that might give me some signs that, like, we're doing this award and everything looks great, but my kid doesn't seem that is excited about it? Or, I mean, where are there any places that we can be more aware of that, or how to connect to that?
Yeah, I would just say, like, if they're like, I don't really deserve this reward, or like they make like a remark about like, I don't really, like, this isn't like the best I could do, definitely talk to them about that, because that's like an important thing to like notice. It's very like, if they think that they're not doing a good job, it really hurts if someone else says they're doing good. And definitely acknowledging that is very important, I would say.
But it's also like, if you do realize that they're not doing good and they don't want to hear that, like, they don't want to hear that good job or anything, it's hard to, like, say, okay, well, you actually didn't do very good, because it's just hard as a parent to, like, you know, like, do that stuff.
Right.
And so you just need to ask them questions and talk to them and, you know, make sure that if they don't feel that they did a good job, that you, like, notice that and everything. And so...
Okay. Yeah, there are several scenes in the film. The lead character, Kayla, is obviously being raised by her single father. And, you know, of course, there are going to be some differences there, just him being, you know, one parent, him being a man, whatever. But I had a lot of my own connections to the film in terms of he was trying to connect to her at times. He really wanted to. And he would say things sometimes that she'd just be like, oh, my gosh, like, shut up. You know, there's a scene where she's at the kitchen table with her earphones in and he's just kind of saying dorky things. And it's really hard for us, too. Like, we don't know what to say or what to do. How do you think it's good to have, like, a check-in time with parents? Or, like, what is a way to bridge that gap of connection? Or should we just take your cues at times? Like help. What do we do?
I would say maybe having, like, a time, like, reserved for, like, just, like device free, like just talking, because that's all.
Did you just say device free?
A time for just talking. Yeah. Like just because it's always easy to just pull up your phone and be like, oh, well, I gotta go, and like I can't talk right now. It's an easy defense mechanism. You'll be like, I don't want to talk about this. I can just use this as a way to get like away from the situation. But definitely having a time where that's not available is important, I would say.
Okay. You need to make it routine, like, you know, like a daily thing where they can just, you know, realize that, okay, like at the beginning they might be like, oh, this sucks, and then they'll start to realize that it actually, you know, does help them and everything. But it needs to be like a routine, or else it could just, you know, fall apart.
Yeah. And that's tough, I think, because of our schedules as parents, especially if our kids are busy and we're working, and even if we're not, there's just so much going on. It can be hard to do that. I think that the other thing that comes up is some parents really struggle with talking about feelings with their kids. So they want to, but they don't even have the emotional language. What are your thoughts about that?
I would say just, it's one of the most important things you can do. I mean, you could give them like some sort of like media, like a book or something to talk to them about it, but it's best if you just talk to them like face to face about it.
Yeah. Yeah, my parents have given me some books on that sort of stuff, and it helps for sure, but it's always, you know, better to have someone there. So, I mean, you just gotta try your best if you're not really like, you know, that emotionally strong, or you don't really know what to do. It's just talking about like anything will help. It doesn't have to be like okay, let's talk about anxiety. Just like if you start like small, you can end up like building your way up to like a really good relationship, and then you'll be able to like unlock that side of like them, that where they'll open up a little bit more. So
yeah. Do you think that in general, you know, dads versus moms, and I think it varies widely, but I mean, we were talking earlier in the show about boys having less emotional language. Do you think that, you know, dads have less emotional language, or moms have more, or do you think it just varies? I mean, I think it probably varies. But generally speaking, what are your thoughts about that?
Generally speaking, it varies from person to person. But I would say, like, males have generally less emotional language, since it's kind of like how we're brought up, like, just man up and don't even, like, deal with it. So definitely it varies, but generally males have less, so.
Yeah, it's just like the common, you know, like suck it up and stuff like that. But there's a lot of males out there that are very emotional, and that's like super cool and everything. But it's just like the way that they were like, you know, raised. It's just kind of, and I hope that changes eventually, so that, like, it's kind of equal between both genders and they can just kind of open up. But it's always been like that, where, you know, males are kind of taught to be a certain way.
Yeah, I think that I find that even when I see adults, you know, in relationships, you can see what that does to your with your partner if you can't talk about what you feel. And so I think we need to do a better job of teaching our boys emotional language. I think that some boys are very emotional. I think all boys are emotional on some level. It's just a matter of degree. But this assumption that boys, you know, don't, just because they're not showing it outwardly, don't have certain feelings, I think has done you guys a disservice. So I'm very much hopeful that that will continue to change. Is there anything else that came up in the film that you think is worth, you know, reflecting on as you look back on completing middle school yourselves? I know you're going into high school, so that's a whole other, let's talk again in a few more years, but you know, when you think about middle school, what advice, what feedback, or what came up for you in the film that you think is important?
I would say just, I mean, don't have your expectations be like through the roof. And it's not going to be terrible. There's just, everything's changing and it's going to be different. And like, don't fear change when it comes to middle school. It's, be open to it. There's a lot that changes, and everyone's going to change in middle school. But just be open to it.
Yeah. Another thing that kind of stuck with me is awkward social situations. And I feel like you have to go through that. You have to go through those awkward social situations, whether you like it or not. And mm-hmm. It's just, you know, you're going to, you know, you'll end up gaining some courage. And, you know, you can't just, like, avoid all social situations or interactions your entire life. And so you're going to have to, you know, start putting yourself in those situations. And eventually you'll just become comfortable and it'll be great. And that's, you know, I think that's a lesson for everyone. You just kind of have to, you know, that was a strong point in the movie, is to put yourself out there. And mm-hmm. I think that everybody has to do that. And it's really helpful. So
definitely.
Yeah, I think those are both good points. You know, staying open and being open to change, trying new things. When you are an adult, frankly, it still happens. You know, you can walk in a room and be like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know that I fit in here. This is uncomfortable. I think leaning into the fact that your whole life, it gets a little easier as you become more confident. But, you know, I don't know any adults who can say that they've got it all figured out and they can just walk in any situation and not feel, you know, insecure. Or, I mean, I can go in, that movie put me in my eighth grade self multiple times. I was just feeling those cringy moments. Well, on that note, I think we will wrap up the show. I want to thank both of you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you guys were awesome. I really appreciate it. And I do want to highly recommend the film. Like I said, there are a few moments, if you're a parent who is more on the conservative side, but you want to show your child, maybe like, what, pre-screen the movie yourself and decide if it feels okay. There are just a couple scenes that are, they don't really go anywhere. And I think it's kind of naive to think, would you guys agree, that your kids already don't know about these things?
Definitely, yeah. It's so real. It doesn't even... Everybody already knows about those things. And
okay. So you know the couple of scenes I'm talking about, right, that are a little R-rated-y for whatever. They're really not. What age? I mean, I read an article saying there was a day they actually suspended the rating of the film completely because it really is a film they were saying even 6th and 7th graders could see. I think 6, it depends on what your child's been exposed to. But, I mean, to think that they don't already hear and see these things if they have cell phones is probably extremely unrealistic. So... at the end of the day, what are your thoughts about the appropriateness of this film? I mean, obviously you guys are not adults, but what do you think?
I would just say just generally middle schoolers need to watch this, since it's what happens in middle school. It's not like it's like out there. It's just kind of, these experiences are just so oddly real. It's kind of jarring at moments. Like these level of things are going to happen near and around your child, and that's something you need to realize. It's like, this isn't, you can't like shelter them from that. You have to be like, this is what's going on. You can't like deny it. You have to be like, okay, this is, yeah, I don't know.
It's called the eighth grade, but I feel like it should just be called the middle school experience, because it's really just for everyone. It's just what you're going to go through, whether you're in seventh grade going into eighth grade. It's going to be what you're going to experience in eighth grade. And I really think that it just helps you realize that, you know, a lot of people, this is just what it's like. And, right. You know, it might help you, you know, deal with eighth grade if you're going into that grade, or, you know, you can reflect back on it. And so I think it's helpful for all middle schoolers. You just got to be careful of those little bits. But
right, I agree. Yeah, I think it's just as important for parents to see, too, because we really don't. There are some things about the film that became really crystal clear to me, you know, with the internet. I hate to say it, keep bringing it up, but it was like, oh my gosh, like that's what that's really like. That juxtaposition of her making videos about how to go out in the world and be confident and not being confident, right? It's so great. And there were so many things we could have talked about today. Like, I really do feel like we could do 3 more shows on, you know, the way she was going through Instagram and the content she was exposed to and the things you can Google. And like, you know, as a parent, that's pretty scary. So, but to think your kids haven't been exposed to it, I know at this point we're 3 teenagers, 4, I guess, really, almost. It always happens before you think it's going to happen. You know, your kids are exposed to things before you think, oh, it's coming, but it comes way earlier than you think it's going to happen. So, all right. Well, on that note, we'll wrap the show up. You've been listening to Moody with Dr. Sage. I'm your host, Kim Sage, a clinical psychologist, and this show airs live every Sunday morning at 8 a.m.